Hello, and thank you for listening to episode 6 of 60 Minutes With. I'm Dave, and after a break over Christmas and the New Year, the podcast is back. And we're going to kick off 2015 with some entertainment chat. And of course, I'm joined, as always, by Chris and Ramrod. I think I should say early on that these entertainment shows should be rebranded as a minimum of 60 minutes with, as we tend to go a bit over. But we thought, well, what the hell, you know, we've got stuff to say, we may as well get it all out of the way in one show rather than cut it in half. So, hope you all had a good break over the Christmas and New Year. Welcome to 2015. Get yourself comfortable and get ready for some entertainment chat with myself, Chris, and Ramrod. Right, I want to start this episode with a little bit of entertainment news and the fact the way that entertainment's gone down the pan due to so-called terrorists. Now, Ramrod, I know this first one didn't affect you quite as much, but during Christmas, PSN and Xbox Live went down, didn't it, Chris?
It did. It did. I forget what the term is now. There's a term for what they did, basically.
DNS, wasn't it? Denial of service? Maybe not. Maybe that's something completely different.
Just essentially clogged up all the servers and everything, which just, like, PSN and Xbox Live for a little while ate its own arsehole.
It did. Yeah. Did this affect you greatly?
Do you know what? It did affect me. How dare you
did it
treat me as an outcast, because it did directly affect my life.
You Wi-Fi free Neanderthal.
Yeah, I have no Wi-Fi. I have, honest to God, if the shit hit the fan, I'd be the first one up a mountain with a rifle, and you'd be there going, I can't get online. And I'd be going, but I'm alive. You know, I can't fucking get on, Far Cry. And I'd be going, it's all right, mate. I've just eaten a bear. I'm alive. The zombies won't find me up here. It did affect me because... No, it didn't affect
me at
all. Do you know what I mean?
The thing is, we'd find out first, because we'd have had, like, Twitter and everything on Wi-Fi, and found out first that the zombie outbreak was happening, and you'd have been eaten, and me and Chris would have gone, all right, we'll meet up somewhere on high ground and maybe have let you know.
And have a kiss, or would you, without me? Is that what would have happened, Dave?
It might have done to start with. You've got to keep,
I am well
you've
prepared
got to keep warm.
Zombies.
It's winter.
Don't think me a fool. I have seen every film I need to see about surviving zombie apocalypse, even though it's nothing to do with what you're talking about.
Yeah, how did we get on from PSN and Xbox Live to this zombie apocalypse happen?
Well, it's going to happen, mate.
Well, yeah, I guess it is.
Gonna happen.
It's 60 minutes with, you know, we kind of throw the rule book out the window. Just anything and everything.
Yeah.
it's fair game, isn't it, really?
So. It is, yeah.
I'm quite glad in a way, though, that because when I see these things happening, obviously I'm envious of having online ability. My girlfriend's like, oh, no, let's get Wi-Fi every 2 seconds. It's like, are you going to pay for it then? But if I did have it, I think my social life would die, because I know once I got on that little sweet ride everybody's on at the moment, that would be me done. I'd be just living a dream in Skyrim somewhere, flying a dragon around or something. It's quite nice I don't have it, because it keeps me grounded a little bit, but I am jealous of all you men that can play FIFA online against each other.
This is the thing, I don't know about you, Chris, though, but I, even though I've got like PSN Plus, and having said that though, my Xbox Live Gold ran out I think about 5 months ago now, and I haven't renewed it and not missed it. But I think that's purely because I don't use my 360 too much now. I'm like, I've swapped over to PS4. But even using that, I'm not like a massive online gamer. I'm still sort of mostly single player. What about you?
Yeah, generally speaking, I think the thing that annoyed me most about it was that, I'm all for a bit of anarchy. You know, I'm sort of like... not so set in my ways or old fashioned that I just think, fair enough. I like it, shakes things up a little bit. I understand all that kind of stuff. But the fuckheads that did this didn't seem to have any particular reason or cause to do it other than the fact that they could. And, you know, their justification for doing it is that, well, Microsoft and Sony have millions of dollars or pounds or whatever, and should be able to protect against this for stuff. And that's fair enough. I understand all that. But then it's almost as if, well, you're doing it on probably one of the most disruptive days that you could have done it. You know, it's kind of like consoles are being sold left, right, and centre, Xbox and Sony. And it's like, well, you're doing it on Christmas Day, so you're doing it just because you're a bunch of pricks. It's not, you know, there was, if there was other reasons, I guess, or not that the people should have a reason to do this kind of stuff. It's just kind of, it's annoying more than anything else. It didn't particularly bother me. It was just that, you know, because like, I just got fed up of hearing about it on fucking Twitter, to be quite honest with you. It was just like, oh, PSN's down again, or Xbox is down. Can anybody get on? No, no, still can't get on. Can you get on yet? No, still can't get on. I just switched off Twitter. I just, like you, Ramrod, I just kind of thought, you know what, fuck all this technology. Yeah. I'm just going to switch it all off, and because I'm fed up of hearing about it. That and fucking Gamergate, I'm sick of hearing about the shit of it.
Let's all have a beer instead. Like, that's my fault.
Yeah, it's fucking Christmas, for Christ's sake. Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciate that, you know, kids want to play on the consoles and they want to play online and probably, you know, play Call of Duty and call somebody a faggot or something like that. And I just think, oh, come on, you know, it's Christmas. You know, it's... okay, you shouldn't have to have something like this happen to sort of like remember that you've got families and there's other things you can do other than play on video games. It's just, it just wound me up for that particular reason, just because, like I said, one of them was interviewed on 5 Live by Stephen Nolan, and, you know, they're just intelligent guys, you know, just didn't seem to have any real justification for doing it. And then somebody came along, and I've forgotten his name now, basically his internet sensation, I think it's all about file share and stuff like that. Is it Kim something or other? I forget now totally. It's kind of blanked it out of my memory. But he came along and he gave them a shitload of money in terms of vouchers and stuff like that. And they took it. And again, that kind of suggests to me, well, you're just doing it for the money. You're just doing it for, you know, because you can. You're criminals. You know better than you're thieves or whatever. It's just that kind of that. I don't know. It just, if you've got a cause, if you're doing it for a cause or doing anything for a cause, then fair enough. But it was just the sake of, well, we've been offered loads of money, so why not take it? Just because,
yeah,
we're arseholes. It just that. It was just more of the fact that, like I said, it was just fucking everywhere. And I was just like, for Christ's sake, come on, let's do something else. You know, we're so dependent on these freaking consoles. And I didn't need to play online. I could quite happily kind of plug in my Super Nintendo or something like that, or whatever. I could do something else. I spent time with my daughter. You know, I didn't spend Christmas playing video games, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I
did learn something, though, because when you haven't got the access to PSN Plus, and I thought, okay, I'll have a few goes on a few single-player games, I couldn't play them. It would just go, like, trying to log in. I didn't know that you had to sign out of PSN. Mm. You had to go to the settings bit and sign out of PSN to play the single-player game, because I was getting really pissed off. I thought, okay, so there's no access to PSN. I only want to play a single-player game, and it's not letting me play it. Now, there'll be people that are maybe... I mean, I'm not like hugely tech-savvy as far as stuff like that goes, but there could be people that are like totally blank with that, and they would try to play a single-player game and couldn't. And it should be easier than it is, really, than having to do shit like that. If there's no access to it, you should still be able to just access your single-player game without having to dick around with stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is the thing that people forget, that, you know, we're kind of almost there anyway, to be quite honest, but when the Xbox One, or Bone, as I like to call it, was announced, it was going to be online, DRM, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
And people forget that, you know. It's like kind of they switched their, you know, because there was such a backlash against it all, so they kind of decided, okay, this is probably not the best idea in the world. But we're pretty much there already. You know, there are certain games that you can only play online, like Destiny, one of the biggest games that came out last year. You can... I only play that online, as far as I know. There are certain other games that you can only play online. So and to access a lot of the functionality with certain games, you can only play them online. And let's face it, there are so many broken games released that need patching in sort of like weeks and months after the games come out. You need to have access to an internet, and it's just kind of... it's depressing in a way. So, you know, I love video games. I've loved them all my life, but it's just, you know, it kind of... you do feel, or maybe just because I'm getting turned into an old fucker, you just kind of like, you feel the need to moan about something all the time these days. So I don't know. But it's a love-hate relationship at times, you know, with video games, I think.
It is, yeah. And another way that, like, the entertainment was affected by, like, terrorists and terrorist threats and that was with something I know you, Ramrod, you can wade in deep with this one.
Pornhub went down, I know.
Yeah, what did you do? You were just a gibbering wreck, mate, for days. It's, you know, it's your daily trip to the co-op for a 12-pack of toilet roll just, like, stopped. It was weird. No, of course, Sony sort of jibbed out a little bit with the release of The Interview and said they weren't going to release that, and then they did, which in a way it turned out like a plus for it because it gave a lot of publicity to a film that maybe people wouldn't have seen. I was going to watch it anyway, but, you know, it did give people going, oh, what's this about The Interview then? And then, of course, they changed their mind. It was released in cinemas in America and it was made available online. So I don't know if you watched The Interview yet, Chris.
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
I mean, I kind of like Seth Rogen. I kind of like James Franco. I can take them or leave them. I'm not huge fans of them. So it's one of those, if it comes on Netflix, I'll probably watch it. But it didn't inspire me to go out and watch it, you know, just because of all the hype and everything.
Yeah.
So, but is it any good? Have you guys seen it?
Well, Ramrod, over to you, The Interview.
Well, I mean, you know, to tie into like Sony at the end there and owning the world at the moment, don't they? And if this was nothing more than a shrewd advertising campaign, I'd be quite amazed. If this was actually North Korea declaring this film an act of war, I really don't think anybody in North Korea has got time to watch a fucking Seth Rogen, James Franco comedy. It was Sony own everything. They do, though, don't they? Like, Disney owns Star Wars and Marvel. I'm sure Sony owns Disney and Star Wars and Marvel in some secret bunker somewhere. And it went online, I think, earlier today saying, guess what? The Interview is finally going to be released in the UK. And I wrote underneath, I've seen it twice. You know, you're not getting my money.
Yeah.
Because we're internet savvy. I know what Wi-Fi is and all that, by the way.
even though you haven't got it.
I haven't got it. You know, I mean, with The Interview, it's very funny. I think it's very funny. But I've sat and watched it twice now. Watched it when I was pretty drunk and when I was half drunk. I don't think I could watch it sober and have the same experience. But it is what it is. It works. It's funny. Like, but Team America came out, what, 10 years ago, if that, something? And that was so, like, anti-Islam, pro-America, anti-America at the same time. Nobody gave a crap about that. Only people cared about was the doll sex scene in it.
Oh,
why
God.
This is, you know, it stirred up so much, you know, tension. It's advertising. It's brilliant advertising by Sony. I put it down to that. That's not even like a theory. It's literally that. You know, it's an okay comedy. It's not The Wolf of Wall Street. It's functioning. It's funny. The portrayal of, oh God, am I going to start a war if I say anything? I'm scared of saying anything now. They're going to come for a stay.
Just put allegedly on anything you say.
Allegedly, the portrayal of their great leader is brilliant. You know, they mock him, but you know, he's born into this legacy of cruelty and he's got to fulfill this role. But he likes Katy Perry and margaritas. And that it is worth watching for that. But I mean, I suppose if you don't know the political state of North Korea, it's wasted on a lot of audiences. It's aimed at anyway, I think, because people that get off on a Seth Rogen movie, you know, they're like, what, 16 to 25-year-olds. And they probably don't know what's happening in North Korea anyway, so all this is wasted on them. But, you know, well done, Sony, for fucking up Christmas Day and starting a war. So, you know, they're Satan, aren't they? Sony is S for Satan, Sony Satan. There
That's
it is. They've fucked up Christmas and they've started up World War III. Satan's on a throne, a big Sony throne with surround sound.
Yeah, playing Xbox.
On a very clavier, playing a fucking Xbox One. Nice one.
I found this film far funnier than I was expecting. I hadn't really got high hopes for it. And maybe that sometimes that works with films. The favour, really, doesn't it? You know, you can go into a film and your expectations are so high and it has to be good, because if it's not as good as you think it's going to be, it just like bombs for you. So I went into this thinking, it's not really expecting much, and I genuinely like laughed out loud so many times during it. I thought it was really good. It's a buyer for me, put it that way. I will buy it when it comes out like on Blu-ray or something.
It's Franco, I think. I mean,
yeah, his character's amazing.
He's like Jeremy Kyle of America at some, or he's like Geraldo Rivera, but like a really low budget version. And it, like, he gets like a brilliant celebrity admission at the beginning, and then he becomes like this huge like phenomenon in America, and the government choose him because he's uber popular at the moment, which is a good spin on celebrity. You know, I mean, look at Celebrity Big Brother right now. I mean, these people are famous all of a sudden, but who the fuck are they? We don't know. And that's Franco's character, but he's so eccentric and overindulgent in it that you really love him, even though he's a total dick. You know, he's like having orgies and he's doing drugs all the way through it, and like he fucks up giving a ricin strip to Kim Jong-un by he puts it in a packet of chewing gum, I think, and he goes, nobody will ever find it in a packet of chewing gum, this ricin strip. And a guard pulls it out and goes, what's this? And it's like, it's just chewing gum. And he starts eating the ricin strip, and it's like, oh fuck, there goes our only chance. But yeah, he's the big anchor for it, and it does work. It's just a shame that so much hype's happened around it. It's kind of like gone really high in everybody's radar, and now it's like, well, it's not come out yet, so nobody's gonna be bothered to watch it, I suppose, when it comes out. They missed the trick there. They did it for America, didn't they, really?
Yeah, I think
they stirred it all up for an American dollar, and they've had that and then whatnot. But yeah, it was a good move by Sony, but it's a good funny film.
It is, yeah. I'd recommend it to you, Chris, definitely.
Yeah,
I think you'd like it.
Nice. Well, yeah, I'll check it out sometime.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's like a political satire as well. It's quite good to see how, because we all know how North Korea is. Let's be honest, it's fucked, isn't it? You know,
allegedly. Just remember, allegedly.
It could be a beautiful, sprawling economy, Utopia, for all we know.
Yeah,
I don't think it is.
Where nobody's tortured and nobody's repressed, or you can say whatever the hell you want.
Yeah,
and
there's anything there.
There's plenty of food and everything. It's fine.
Paradise.
Yeah. Well, keeping on the subject of films, we're halfway through January. I've watched two films this year. Can you believe it? My film watching diary has like plummeted. The two films I've watched, one was a rewatch as well. I rewatched Necromantic because Arrow had done the great Blu-ray release of it.
Beautiful.
So I sat and rewatched that again. Chris, I know Ramrod's watched it. Have you ever seen Necromantic, Chris?
I haven't, no. I haven't seen that one.
Don't watch it with a wife.
No, don't. And it's not a happy film. If you want some sort of happy-go-lucky, feel-good film, don't watch this. It's only, like, I think, 72 minutes. It's pretty grim. It's very low budget. And it's, I think, what you call an acquired taste. Mm. It's definitely one of those Marmite films. You'll either love it or hate it. I love it. I watched it. I was lucky enough to see the first UK showing of it. I think it was on the Black Sunday in Manchester, a horror film festival all nighter, and that was like, I think, 91 or something like that, 92.
Tina, your 50th birthday day.
It was, yeah. That's why I remember it, mate.
Celebration.
Tina had never seen it, so I sat and watched this Arrow Blu-ray with her, and she hated it. She really hated it. So it's not one I would recommend, but if you're into the horror genre and you haven't seen it, it's one you've got to watch. You know, it's one of those films. And the only other film I've watched this year is Housebound.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good. I really enjoyed that. I won't say too much about it for spoilers. People haven't watched it, but that is one I would recommend. I really enjoyed that film.
I found it on, I was going through Fangoria's top 10 horror movies of 2014. So I was going through going, yeah, tick, tick, scene. And number two on the list was Babadook.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, what the fuck's number one? And it said Housebound, a little known New Zealand horror comedy. And I went, well, let's get it then. And what a little gem it was. You know, in the vein of something like Joe Dante would have done.
Yes,
back
definitely.
In the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you actually identify with characters and it doesn't bore you and it gives you twists and surprises. Nobody will get to see this film. God knows if it had ever come out in this country.
Yeah.
But, you know, if anybody can get their hands on Housebound, brilliant. It's like Peter Jackson without the uber gore.
It is, yeah, yeah. And it's like New Zealand are on a roll, aren't they, as well, with, you know, What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, don't even go there.
That's...
Oh, my God. It's like the best film you're going to see this year, that is.
Oh, God, that is like... Yeah, I would put that of films... I mean, because I watched it in 2014. That was probably my film of the year last year, was What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that one, Chris, yet?
You know what? It's this is why I love kind of doing this as well, because I get to find out about movies that I've sometimes heard of and sometimes never heard of, and that, I'll be honest with you, is one I haven't heard of. And so I'm just having a quick look at it now on IMDb, and I should say
it's amazing. It's like, you know, you would have seen like Shaun of the Dead.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that is like for the sort of pastiche, the loving piss take of zombie films.
Homage.
Yes, homage. Yeah. This does the same to vampire films. Now, okay. if you've got like a good knowledge of vampire films, which I'm sure a lot of people listening to this, and we definitely have, there's so many references that will just have you in stitches, and it's filmed in like a documentary style of they're filming this vampire family of, you know, just living their life, and
they're flatmates, aren't they?
They're flatmates. Yeah, that's it, flatmates. And but they're all through different generations, going back to like this Nosferatu.
He's like 6,000
years old, and they just lock him up in this cupboard. It's oh yeah, it's really. Again, yeah, my film of last year is What We Do in the Shadows.
It's got the dude from Flight of the Conchords.
Yes, yeah,
in it
has. Yeah.
And Eagle versus Shark. I don't know if you've seen that.
That's
one as
literally,
well.
It's the same writing team, and so if you're hip to their sort of style of dry sort of New Zealand humour, this is. I'll be honest. Like, I honestly think Edgar Wright's never going to make another film like Shaun of the Dead.
He nailed it,
you know, and these guys coming together have made something, so it's going to be like the With None of Eye of horror comedies. With None of Eye,
oh yeah,
carries that sort of same dry humor that you've got to get it to laugh at it, but so many people would really laugh at this film if they like horror movies. And you know, I've watched it with couple of different people who you know have grown up with The Lost Boys and, you know, The Hunger and films, you know, essential vampire films, and then a generation that's just known Twilight.
Oh,
and
God.
There
hell
you have
fucking hell, imagine that.
Fuckers, you know what I mean?
Christ.
It's so much. Well, I can't even say, I'm like lost for words trying to say how good it is. It's so funny. But like in terms of like a vampire film, it's like in the vital canon now of what I'd recommend to people with, you know, Near Dark and Fright Night. I'd say What We Do in the Shadows, because it is a vampire film. There's gore in it, a lot of gore, and a lot of heart in it as well, to be fair. It's got a good story, but you'll piss yourself laughing at it. I mean, the one standout scene for me is where they go to this big vampire ball. So like zombies, vampires, ghouls, they all get invited to this ball at the end. So they're trying on costumes, and one of them wants to go as Blade, and he doesn't get that going as Blade isn't going to go down very well. That's the sort of thing it is.
Yeah, and the pack of werewolves in it as well. They're pretty good.
We're werewolves, not swearwolves.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say if any film you're going to watch next, Chris, that we could recommend, What We Do in the Shadows is the one we'd tell you to do, yeah.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Just going back to Necromantic, I just typed it into Wikipedia. And I love the poster, I have to say. It's of a skeleton with an eye popping out. It's like an eyeball popping out of his head, I guess. And he's cupping... and appears to be suckling on a naked woman.
Yeah.
That's the film in a nutshell.
It is, yeah. There's a lot of eye love in this film. There's a lot of eye sucking and all this coming out. Yeah, it's
eye sucking?
Yeah, yeah. Corpse, dead. Well, obviously, it will be a dead. If it's a corpse, it will be dead. Dead corpse, eye sucking, and rotting, slimy corpse feeling and shagging. Yeah, it's that kind of a film.
Oh, Dave.
Nice.
You're saying all the right words there. it's like that. It's like Tetsuo. You remember the old black and white Tetsuo with sex and dead things.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. So, yeah, and if you've never seen Tetsuo, again, highly recommended.
Yeah.
Is that the Iron Man?
Tetsuo? Yeah. Tetsuo the Iron Man. That was about 1 hour, 7 minutes long, I think. And that was like 1989 as well. And that was one of these black and white, small, dirty films about a guy turning into a tank and his dick turns into a drill. But this is like the German version of that without the machine sex. I'm really selling this to you, aren't I?
Yeah. No, well, I seem to remember watching Tetsuo years and years ago on BBC Two. There seems to have like a kind of cult film, or you know, Japanese film seasons, and I think like Channel 4 used to do a lot of that with Mark Kermode introducing it or whatever, and it seems to have dropped off a little bit, but yeah, and I seem to remember watching Tetsuo and just thinking, what the fuck he's going.
With the Necromantic though, like with Tetsuo, he made a sequel, he made Necromantic 2, which is a better film, but he did like an Evil Dead 2 thing with it where he kind of remade the first one. Like Tetsuo 2 was like a remake of the first one with more money and more gore. But oh, fucking hell, I'm gonna have to watch them all now, aren't I? You've got me thinking about dead sex and machines and stuff now, Dave. I'm gonna have to go to a website, for Christ's sake.
Oh god,
we should log off a minute.
Dead sex and machines, that's your two main turn-ons in it, mate, that one.
There's a Michael Bay movie in there somewhere.
Go on then, what about you two guys?
You know that there'd be like a fucking a 360 sweeping shot like, yeah, looking up at the one of the main stars or something. Loads of American flags as well.
Oh yeah, there would be. Yeah, of course there would.
That's how it goes, man. Well, I mean, I got Oscar fever on my mind at the moment. Oscar nominations came out today,
and I haven't seen any of these actually.
Well, I mean, Oscar season's a bit of a. It's one of those things that's in the last couple of years. You'll find that, you know, when the Oscars are coming around, all the really brilliant films come out at the same time, and you're a bit spoiled for awesome cinema in one kind of thing. I mean, last year we had like 12 Years a Slave and Wolf of Wall Street all kind of rammed in at the same time, and you're going, but this is brilliant and this is brilliant, and it's happened again, fucking Oscar time. That the nominations came out today, and having watched a couple of the films, in the cinema, even though they're not out yet, I can honestly say that there's quite a lot of tough calls going on. I don't know if you've seen any of the nominations today, Dave.
I haven't, no.
Well, having watched a couple of these movies, and specifically one called Whiplash.
Yeah. Oh, this is good. Yeah.
If none of you have seen it yet, this movie's been talked up quite a lot in the press now for like it's not got a big cast behind it, a big studio behind it or anything like that. It's one of these movies that the guy who's made it and the stars who we have seen before are going to be like catapulted into any, you can do any film you want now. J.K. Simmons, who you'll probably know as J. Jonah Jameson from Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Vince Schillinger from Oz is always going to be, I don't know if you used to watch Oz.
There you go. Yeah, he's the, you know, face down in the pillow, you know, you're my bitch
evil
now.
Neo-Nazi bastard.
That's the guy.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah, I love him.
He's very good in Oz. I've seen Oz and everybody's gone, he's a revelation, but it's like, well, have you not seen Oz? You know,
yeah,
it's one of those roles that he's so good in it, but it's effortless to him because he's one of these guys that's, he's been acting so long. He's been in 100 things and now everybody's gone, he's amazing. Well, yeah, he is amazing. But this film is, the only thing I can say about it is it's like one of those great sports movies where you've got the guy driving the other guy into being great, but it's through jazz drumming. Now, to most people that might go, what? I don't care about jazz drumming. But it's like I said today on Facebook, I said it's like the Lost Scorsese movie. It's that well made. I think it deserves every award it's up for, which isn't many. I mean, J.K. Simmons up for Best Supporting Actor, and I do think he's a shoo-in for it, really, because he's had such a good reception for his performance in it. But the lead actor in it, the lad's called Miles Teller. I think he's only been in like some shitty teen comedies and stuff. He actually learned to do jazz drumming for it, and he's absolutely incredible in it. You'd think he's been doing it all his life. And he literally is probably, I think he's the best thing in the film, but he's not even nominated. And this is how Oscar time pisses me off. Because like with The Wolf of Wall Street, 12 Years a Slave was an amazing film and it tackled some really important issues and it was very well made. But that said, Martin Scorsese overlooked again. And here we have another great performance. He's not even been nominated. Another film like Foxcatcher, which is it's ridiculously good. You know, Bennett Miller's been Best Director nominated, but it's not for Best Picture. So I don't know how they weigh it up in Oscar land, because you'd think if he's the Best Director, surely it should be up for Best Picture as well.
Well,
I don't know how it works. I mean, and I've rewatched Goodfellas today because I'm running out of Martin Scorsese back catalogue at the moment. I'm going crazy looking for films that can recreate the thrill of The Wolf of Wall Street for me. So I watch Goodfellas again, and then you think that was beaten to Best Picture and Best Film by Dances with Wolves.
Oh my God!
Do you know what I mean?
Have you seen the trailer that's online? Directed by Martin Scorsese, he's in it with Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro.
No.
Yeah, I saw it go up this morning. I was tagged in it by one of my Facebook friends, going, "Holy shit, look at this!" And it's the coming together of two, well, three. Let's be honest, three geniuses, and it looks like the greatest film you're never going to see.
It does. It looks amazing.
It's like a trailer for some like casino in Asia, or something. Yeah.
It is worth watching. If you've not seen it, Chris, search it out later on. It is well worth watching, It does look really good.
Awesome. I'll check that out now, yeah. Well, not now, because we're recording, obviously.
Do it now. Watch it now.
Oh, you ignorant bastard. You go off and watch films. Go on.
Get on your bloody Wi-Fi. I mean, Oscars is... It's one of those things that I get excited about because, well... I like the thrill of seeing, yes, they've won, although boo, they haven't got nominated. But, I mean, that's this time of year, so many. But I'm just going to have a little mention for adapted screenplays. Now, this is a category I really like because I think if there's good writing, it deserves to be recognised. And one of the best films I've seen in a long time was Nightcrawler. And Tony Gilroy's been nominated for that, I'm going to applaud because he really deserves the Oscar for that. But American Sniper will probably get every fucking award going because it's about American killers.
It's Clint Eastwood, though. Clint Eastwood deserves another Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's, you know, nearly a billion years old. you know, I'll be honest, American Sniper is one fuck of a flag-waving movie. But because Clint Eastwood has done it, he's telling a great story about a great American. Whether he's a mass murderer, let's be honest, but it was an act of war. He was doing it to save lives. And it's one of those, you know, if you're an American and you watch it, you're totally behind him. But as a British person, and I've, you know, I can't really relate much to these stories I find when I watch them, although I really enjoy them as war movies. Mm. I look at the character he's playing, and he's killed a lot of people. But Eastwood's done a great thing, is he shows him he's got morals, he's got remorse. And it ruined his life, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll win a lot of Oscars. I think that one will sweep up. You know, Bradley Cooper's brilliant in it. It's a great, great film.
Well, that Grand Budapest Hotel sort of like leading along with Birdman, sort of like a lot of the nominations and stuff for the major, awards. But I mean, I've always, since Batman, really liked Michael Keaton. So I'm pleased to see that he's nominated for a Best Actor award. Because I think he's one of those that kind of he had he's kind of time in the spotlight and everything, and then he kind of like went under the radar a little bit. So I'm really pleased that, I mean, I haven't seen Birdman, but it's kind of like you can't go anywhere on Twitter, like kind of looking at a newspaper or the internet or anything without sort of like seeing Birdman. It's amazing, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I do want to watch it. Have you seen that one?
No, it's well, I haven't seen it yet. I know Dave doesn't watch films anymore. He's in a cave all the time. But I have it to watch in the cinema. I'm going to go to the cinema and pay my money and watch it, obviously, in my own private cinema I've got. But, it's next to watch, you know. But that's what I mean about Oscar season. You're spoiled for so much, like, great cinema. They throw it at you all at once, and you go, this one. Mm. Keaton, though, I mean, he had such a great spell. And I think, like, Pacific Heights, for me, is such, like, a fucking great movie he's in. And like you say, nobody cast him for so long. Yeah. And then he got RoboCop, and it was like, he was great in it, but what a waste.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, bring him back for Batman.
Oh God, that'd be so good if they do.
Really, I mean, they wanted an old Batman, didn't they? Let's just get Keaton back in there.
Yeah, get him in there. Why not?
Let's get him in there. But no, I haven't watched Birdman yet. There's a couple I haven't watched yet. But I mean, saying Grand Budapest Hotel, what a fucking great movie!
That is super. That is one I did go to the cinema to watch.
What an
as
achievement
well.
In filmmaking that was.
Yeah,
best work he's done.
I think my favourite film of his is Rushmore. I've seen, what was it, The Great Tenenbaums, didn't click with me. What's the other one where it's Adrian Brody and they're on the train? What the fuck's that called?
Oh, the fucking hell. I know the one you mean.
I didn't get on with that at all. That's it. Yeah. I didn't get on with that. I think he's kind of...
Good.
Who, sorry?
The Steve Zissou movie, The Life Aquatic.
Ah, that's one I haven't seen.
Oh, it's, honest to God, right? If you like Rushmore and you like his kind of fairy tale ways, Steve Zissou for me is his best film until Grand Budapest.
Got you. Because even he's kind of getting a little bit pigeonholed, it seems like. You know, he's the kooky guy. He'll do the kooky sort of like stuff. But yeah, I really did like Rushmore. It kind of like clicked with me, like the characters and everything else. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
He's good, Wes Anderson, and he, like Moonrise Kingdom, he has pigeonholed himself, but I mean, that's him, isn't it? And the good thing about him is he's not going to turn into Tim Burton and be given stupid money to remake Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He's going to keep making these great, you know, unique films, and Ralph Fiennes in it is just, he's insanely funny. It's a fucking genius film. And the way he shoots it as well, he like changes like from 4:3 to like 16:9 and all this, and it just doesn't get, nobody watches them unless they know them. That's the thing. It's he's such an acquired taste, isn't he?
Oh, he is. Yeah. More people should watch his films. Mm. Yeah, they should do. Have we got any more movie chat before we move it on a little bit?
I've got one very quickly.
Yeah, go for it. About.
Because I sort of just before Christmas, I picked up a few Blu-rays and whatever from HMV, and Edge of Tomorrow was one of them. I'd heard a few good things about it, and like the reviews I read and everything else, that, you know, generally 4 out of 5s, all that kind of stuff. So, and I sort of watched it when I was a bit ill over Christmas and everything else, and I tell you what, I was just, wow, fuck it, I was blown away by it, if I'm perfectly honest. I just thought, and it's very rare that I watch films more than once because of time and everything else, but and particularly like the next day, but I watched this movie, and the next day I said to Kay, you've got to watch this with me, that's my wife. And but the thing is, like, you know, we've very different tastes in terms of when it comes to films and everything else and TV, and she really enjoyed it as well. It stars Tom Cruise, I think probably people most know this, and it's essentially, I'm going to use the lazy way of describing it, it's a science fiction Groundhog Day. You know, it's that's kind of what it is. It's got a bit of everything, a bit of sort of like Source Code in it, which I assume, you know, you've both seen, which I really enjoyed. That's Duncan Jones who directed that one, wasn't it? And Jake Gyllenhaal. And that was really good and everything. But there's just something about this. It's the thing that kind of, after I watched it, and it's like, he's basically, Tom Cruise played this major, I think he is, and he's like a kind of, it's almost like his rank is, they've essentially given it to him, because, and he's a PR. Aliens have invaded the Earth. They've got like exosuits, kind of like from Advanced Warfare and everything, which are freaking awesome. But, and then so there's this big push to destroy the aliens and everything. And I don't want to say much more than that, because it's one of those films that I think it's so enjoyable to watch, you know. And I've got two issues with it, but I'll come on to those in a minute. But the one thing that I thought was fantastic and phenomenal, and you know, it's Tom Cruise himself, and Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise in a lot of his movies. I watched Jack Reacher recently as well, which I mentioned the time we recorded, and I really liked that. And this is direct, written by Christopher McQuarrie, is it?
He's the key behind.
Yeah,
he's a genius, that guy.
And he wrote Jack Reacher, and he wrote this, and he directed Jack Reacher as well. And he's going to direct the next Mission Impossible movie, which I believe. And you know, he did The Usual Suspects, so he's got like real chops behind him. But it's just the writing behind it. It's funny. It's engaging. The action set pieces are spot on. Tom Cruise plays at the beginning like this kind of cowardly guy who's got no combat experience, doesn't want to quite happily send troops to die, but you know, he wants to be as far away from the battlefield, and he's kind of like forced into that situation. And essentially something happens and he relives the same day, and it's about, it is kind of like Groundhog Day. It's about sort of like finding out why is this happening, what's going on. It's a very lean movie in terms of like time and everything. It's not a very long movie compared to a lot of movies these days, and it's just spot on. I mean, a lot of the CG doesn't look like CG. It's, you know, directed by Doug Liman, who himself, or Liman, has had a really kind of interesting career so far. You know, directed the sort of indie darling Swingers back in the late 90s, then Go, which I'm surprised I haven't seen because that stars somebody I've got a massive man crush on, Timothy Oliphant. Ever since I've watched Justified, I think he's amazing.
Well, you'd like him in Go because he's got his top off quite a lot in Go.
Oh, right. I'm watching that after I've finished recording this. And then obviously went on to the Bourne Identity and then produced or executive produced the other Bourne movies. So he had a link to them. But it's almost like you could say that it's a diverse career, sort of like going from these indie films, then a bit of TV work, then Mr. and Mrs. Smith, again, another big blockbuster, then another blockbuster, with Jumper, which I didn't think was very good, but still, made probably because the main guy in it... Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, God, yeah.
Hayden Christensen.
Yeah. Not a good film.
And a silver-haired Samuel L. Jackson, which is just a bit weird, but still. And then this, you know, it's really diverse. You could argue that as well that he kind of redefined how Bond went because, you know, I think the Bourne movies have influenced, you know, the current Bond, if you like, in terms of the action, the fighting, the stories and everything else. And so... fairly, you know, pretty influential, I'd say. But this movie, I just think it's so good. It really is. And I think the thing that annoyed me about it is that not the film itself, the couple of things, the issues I got with it, maybe it was kind of the name, Edge of Tomorrow. But then it kind of got the marketing was a bit mixed up because then if you go into HMV or whatever, the main thing that sticks out from the Blu-ray case or DVD case is Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
Which in itself is shit, but then Edge of Tomorrow doesn't really say too much about the film, and it kind of maybe it made its money back and a bit more, but it perhaps wasn't as it didn't do as well as it was expected maybe, but it's I don't know, maybe just the thing that annoys me is just that a film like say Transformers, I like the first Transformers film if I'm honest with you, but after that all the others have just been a fucking headache. They're just kind of loud and stupid and they just are, and they're nearly 3 hours long for Christ's sake. You know, it's about a movie of fucking robots hitting each other for Christ's sake. How much story do you need? But this kind of, you know, that can make close to $1 billion, the latest Transformers, and then something like this kind of almost gets overlooked to a certain degree. And you think, this is a funny, smart action movie, you know, the actors are good, you know, Emily Blunt's great, like I say, Tom Cruise, you can see his character sort of change from being this kind of cowardly guy, and as time goes on throughout the movie, he turns into Tom Cruise, you know, and we did the Die Hard movie show for the same coin, Ben and I, and when we were talking about that, we sort of like, look, you know, you can easily spot the bits where it's a stuntman, you know, sort of like doing Bruce Willis's action scenes or some of the other actor scenes. You're not going to be wrong. I'm not saying that actors should do their own stunts because it's dangerous. But Tom Cruise is a proper action, guy. If you look at Mission Impossible 3 or something like that, he just fucking throws himself into everything. It's insane, everything that he does and gets himself into, you know. And I think, you know, regardless of his religious politics or whatever, he's a star, you know. He's great in this. He really is. And I just think more people should watch it. And I would highly recommend it to people to go out and watch because it's superb. It really is. Just a fun ride. Really clever, smart, just funny. Everything. Love it. I thought it was fantastic. Bill Paxton's in it. And he plays
I was just about to say Bill Paxton. Where you didn't even mention Bill Paxton. I was going to go, what about Bill Paxton, though?
Yeah, he's great in it, you know.
It's nice to see him. I mean, it says a lot about the film itself that they had to literally repackage it as Live, Die, Repeat so people would like think, oh, is this a new film? I mean, our audience is that thick these days that they can't appreciate a good fucking movie like this. They've got to play up on its tagline instead of the name of its film so maybe they'll make more money off it. It's insane that this film wasn't like this a monster phenomenon hit because literally, as you put it, it's everything you want from a sci-fi action movie. And it doesn't, like Inception was obviously playing off the back of the Batman success. And everybody went to watch it and went, Inception's brilliant, but I didn't fucking know what was going on. But in this, it doesn't leave you hanging. It reminded me of like a movie, a Gears of War or something. Wasn't it though? I mean, it was like you say about the CGI, the battle scenes were fucking insane. It was like Saving Private Ryan with like fucking huge alien monsters. Absolutely awesome. And when I watched it, I'm a big Tom Cruise fan, and like with Mel Gibson, people go, "Oh, fucking Mel Gibson's this, that, and the other," but he's a fucking he's Mel Gibson. When Tom Cruise is in a movie, I pay attention, and when he's in a big sci-fi movie, even Oblivion, I watched it and enjoyed it. But fucking Edge of Tomorrow, Jesus, really, what a film!
It is.
But
good.
Again, you've got to resell a film because it hasn't made the money it needed. Why not Christopher McQuarrie writing it? But to a film buff, you're going to go in and go, I don't know if you saw his movie Year of the Gun that he wrote and directed.
I've heard really good things about that. That's Benicio del Toro and Ryan Phillippe.
That's the one. And you can see
it's
his writing.
Film. I mean, it's like it's pretty hard hitting from what I've heard.
But it's like you say, it's his writing. Yeah. That makes it a great film, because obviously he's not the best director, because it is a little bit messy, but his writing is so good. How he's not making the next Bond film is beyond me. After Jack Reacher and that, I safely put him in charge of a Bond movie based on what he can do with special effects and big action set pieces.
Yeah. See, man, that's the other thing, like Jack Reacher as well, that was another one that didn't do perhaps as well. I mean, again, made its money back and everything else, but I just think that was a really cracking action movie and sort of like thriller, really, more than action, I guess. Yeah. And again, Tom Cruise plays against type a little bit, you know. It's and there was, I think, a bit of criticism about him being cast in the role because of the character in the book is different in terms of everything else.
Yeah,
and whatever. But you know, Tom Cruise, he's like he says, I'm not the good guy, you know. And that conversation he has with John McClane's son from.
He's like the heavy, isn't he?
He's one of the bad guys. And Werner Herzog in that as well. He's great. He's really creepy. Yeah,
he's terrifying in the film. Who's scared of Werner Herzog? He's a fucking sweetheart. Oh my, he's like an old witch. It's great stuff though. Macquarie comes out with some genius stuff, but definitely, I know Dave will agree with Edge of Tomorrow. I talk about it quite often. I always go Edge of Tomorrow, because it's one of the best. But again, it's one of these movies nobody's going to see.
That's it. I mean,
we got to tell them.
It is. I mean, again, this is one I did see at the cinema, and it's people might look at it and it's a 12. I've got it on Blu-ray now as well. It's 12 rated, and like my views on 12 rated action films are well known. I usually hate them. But I think because it's a sci-fi genre and they're like they're blowing the shit out of like robots and stuff, you can get away with a lot more. And you go in, whoa, that's violent. But because there's no blood, that's why they get the 12 rating. And you touched on something good there, Chris, when you said about Tom Cruise and his religion. And he gets a lot of shit for that in the press and with people as well. And it's to the detriment of what he does, because I think if it's a Tom Cruise film, I want to watch it. Because A, is a damn good actor. B, you said, like, mostly the stunts he does. And you're watching it, and you're going, fucking hell, he's, like, crazy, the stuff he does. And, like, even down to, like, his red carpet walks have become a thing of legend now. He spends hours talking to fans, taking selfies with fans, signing all sorts of shit when it comes to the premiere of his movies. He'll take hours and hours and hours. And personally, I won't hear a bad word said against him. Okay, no. So he's got this religion that people don't agree with. It's, you know, that's got fuck all to do with anybody.
That's his business.
Exactly, you know, but when it comes down to what, you know, you want from somebody, he makes great films, he's a great actor, he does all the stunt stuff, and he looks after his fans. Why give him shit? You know what I mean? It's a bit too much sometimes.
I do hope that when Christopher McQuarrie, if he does Mission Impossible 5, which I think he, looking at IMDb, it's pretty much nailed on, he's doing it. I hope that it kind of helped, you know, the same way that J.J. Abrams did Mission Impossible 3, which for me is the best Mission Impossible. I do like them, even 2, even though it's a bit shit, but it's John Woo in it, so you kind of almost have to like it a little bit. But Mission Impossible 3 for me is the best one. And I hope that it kind of propels him like it has done with J.J. Abrams, you know, into doing... Well, he could do whatever he wants at the end of the day, but I just think, you know, he deserves more recognition for what he does. Didn't he win a frigging Oscar for The Usual Suspects, for the writing in that?
He did, yeah.
You know, so I do... I like to champion these things a little bit, you know. I do like to tell people if I think it's great, you know, if I see something I think is good, because I am the be all and end all, obviously, and my opinion counts. But you know what I mean. But anyway, Yeah, great film.
It is. Right, what do I want to do
Tom
now?
The Tom Cruise love fest. Anyway.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Tom.
We're all in on the Tom Cruise love fest,
he's
mate.
He's beautiful, man.
He is.
Especially when he's got his long hair in Magnolia. Oh,
oh yeah.
Fucking hell. If he had a beard as well and get on.
Considering his age, he's fucking amazing. He's got to be, you know, packed with the devil the way he looks. He's incredible.
Yeah. You're right. He sold his soul. Yes. He sold his soul in Risky Business. That's what he did. He did the pants dance. That's when he sold his soul.
Yeah, that was what he had to do to sell his soul, was that pants dance.
He's a legend. We've all done it, Dave.
We are. Well, actually, yeah.
I have to do it every time I come on this show. You make me fucking do it.
Well, I've seen the pictures as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's no stories made up there. It's true.
I've seen the videos, though, have you? They're on the black net or whatever you call it.
Yeah,
the dark internet. I don't know. The black web, the dark net. That's it, the dark net.
Yeah. Right, let's move it on. Video games. There's two I want to touch on. The first one, Chris, I know you've talked about it on the same coin. And it was high up on your games of the year. Far Cry 4.
Yes.
That's the one. That's the one I've been giving the most love to since we last talked. And again, I mean, you mentioned it on the same coin as well, with like the way that it creates this immersive world. Like, and I'm the same as you, mate. It's the only thing I can liken it to is if anybody's played Red Dead Redemption, the way that it puts you into this world and surrounds you with all sorts of stuff going on that makes you believe that you're in a real world. You know what I mean? You go in there and there's all stuff happening all around you. Now, I've read like people saying, well, it gets a bit samey and all of this. Now, I think I'm about 47% into it, and I've put like about 28 hours into it now, which for me is like an absolute shitload into a game. But I'll go off. I'll do a mission, and then I'll go, okay, I need to like craft my loot bag so I can hold more stuff, and you've got to hunt animals, so I'll do this. And then, but it's so great because like if you've got 15 minutes of game time, right, I'll fire up Far Cry 4, I'll just go and find the nearest mana wheel and spin one of them, or go and find a lost letter or a mask. Or if you've got longer game time, you'll go in and you'll do a mission and try to convert an outpost and all of this. And it's just so... it's just so immersive. And the graphics, it's my favourite one graphically on the PS4, the fact where you can get into a gyrocopter and you're flying along and you'll drop down a bit low and you're skimming the tops of the trees and the trees are swaying and all the leaves are moving and it's like, holy shit, I've never seen anything like this. There's one thing that's really pissing me off, mate, in it. It's the only thing that is getting on my nerves with it. And that is that when you go to like one of the loot boxes that you find, or you've killed somebody and you want to search them for money and whatever they're carrying, and you walk up to them, and it's the same when you like skin an animal or anything like that, and you have to press square. So you'll go up to it, and quite a few times, more often than not, which is what's pissing me off, is you'll go up to one of these things and you have to get in exactly the right place, or else the little dialogue box won't come up to press square. And you go, I'm stood in front of it. Why isn't the button coming up for me to press square? Is this something that you've come across, Chris?
Yes, I can say that. It not to a point where it annoyed me. I think it was more so with the boxes than the bodies. Because after a while, if I wanted to... Because you get money thrown at you in this game, you know, for doing practically anything and everything. It's very generous with giving you stuff. And also, I don't know about you, but I got to a point in the game where I found my favourite loadout. I found my favourite guns, so yeah. I didn't even bother really buying anything else and spending money on that. I think the first thing I did was upgrade. Like, I bought all the maps so I could see where everything was on you know, all the secrets and everything. But it happened to me a few times, but obviously not as often as yourself. But I think as we've established in other shows, you're a bit shit at games, aren't you? You know, if you can't get sort of like do bits and pieces in Shadows of Mordor, or I don't know. It's your age.
It's that hand-eye coordination just goes, mate. I've no idea. I want to do one thing, but my thumbs are doing something completely different.
But it is a phenomenal. It's a phenomenal game. You know, it is. Yeah. It's great fun. You know, have you tried much in co-op at all? Have you played any co-op at all?
I haven't played any co-op yet, mate. I'm waiting on you. This is it.
We will make a date. Definitely. I mean, I've finished the game, but I'm happy to jump in on yours and play as Herc and fuck shit up, because it is one of those games where, like you said, you can just, well, we spoke about it at length last time, you can just do anything and nothing, you know, you just dick around or you know, crack on with the missions. It's great.
It is, yeah. That's like my main game, but my other game that's taken the other bit of time, or my side game, is Hearthstone.
Oh.
Have you ever played this?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's a card game, isn't it?
It's a card game, yeah. Now, it's out on Android, I think only on tablets at the moment. I've been playing it on that. I think it's coming out on phones. They're sort of getting the code in right so you can play it on the phone. And it is a card game. It's based on the Warcraft. It's by Blizzard. It's based on like the Warcraft characters. And it's sort of a cross between, I don't know, it plays almost like chess, but with cards. So you've got all these different characters of like mage and hunter and all these other ones, and each character that you select has got their own deck of cards, and you're given a base pack of 10, and through leveling up your character you're given extra cards. It's really good because you're put against players of a similar level, so you're not put against like people. If I've only got 10 cards with a character, I'm not put against somebody who's got like 20 or 30 cards. It is one of those where there's microtransactions. But, having said that, I mean, I've been playing it for quite a while now. I think it came out on Android, I think it was mid-December, so it's been out about a month now to play it on that. It's not one of those where you have to pay money to progress in it, because I haven't paid a penny on it and still really enjoying it. It's not one of those, again, where, you know, you have to play 5 games and then that's your turn's done and you have to wait 2 hours and play something, you know, play something else and then come back to it. It's really tactical. If you've got that in you where you like collecting stuff, and I know you, Chris, with like you know, your football sticker albums and all this kind of stuff, it has got that and the Pokemon thing of you want to collect all them all and get all the cards and that. If you're of that mindset and you want to pay money, you can do it that way, or you can just play the game and you'll collect it naturally. And it's a good challenge. It's there's a little bit of luck to it, but from what I've played so far, I'm finding that skill has got a lot to do with it, the way you play the cards that you're given. And it's just a really enjoyable, fun, tactical game where you can sit and think, and it's not all action. And, yeah, I'd recommend it if you get the chance to play it, mate. Either of you, you too, Ramrod, if you get the chance to play like Hearthstone on any device, because I know you've got like an Android phone, and it should be coming out on that soon, grab it and play it. It's really good.
I could do with a game because, you know, I'm an Angry Birds man. Fucking how boring is that? Like, do you know what I mean? But I tried to play one where I parked a car in a fucking space and I had like move my phone. Well, it wasn't even my phone, it was somebody else's, and I wanted to throw the fucking thing through a window. Unless I'm shooting a terrorist or scoring a 30-yard screamer or playing a card game, I don't want to know. So I will. I'll have a bang on it. Yeah, yeah. I could do with a game.
Yeah,
I'm not a good game.
What other gaming talk have we got? Come on.
Oh, so I was going to say that I have a slight disadvantage when it comes to things like this. I'm a thick shit, which obviously doesn't help. I'm not really, sort of like, I don't know, unless it's Snap, then I'm kind of a bit screwed, really. But I have heard good things about it. Bit pontoon, I do like that. Yeah, pontoon.
Yeah.
But that includes counting, doesn't it, as well?
True that. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to count to 21, haven't you, on that?
Yeah, so that's always a bit tricky.
You're going to run out of fingers and toes, then. That's no good.
Rummy. I can play rummy.
Whist. That was always one. My granddad taught me how to
whist.
Play.
Whist. Your granddad taught you to play whist.
Whist, not whist.
Oh, whist. I thought it was a whist. No, I was going to say, what the fuck was that?
No. My granddad showed me whist. He didn't teach me.
Hey, we're going to play whist. Over.
I'm going to teach you the ways of whist over length.
Long in the trenches back in the day. That's why old men walk funny now that I'm not going to say in World War One, because that's going to offend people again, isn't it? They were on width.
Yeah.
So is that what you've been doing then, Dave? You've just been playing card games on your phone when you could have been watching Oscar-nominated films?
I know, yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, but this is that only takes 10 minutes. It takes a couple of hours to watch your film.
That's true story, mate.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's my get out clause.
Okay.
Go on, over to you two. Any game talk?
Go on, Ramrod.
Well, I mean, my game life is, again, it's limited, unfortunately, but I did, after Christmas, get entered into a 16-man FIFA 15 tournament on the PlayStation 4 at a local pub. Now, anybody that plays FIFA knows, you know, I know you play it, Dave, that it's the only game that can literally get you up out of your seat.
Yes.
When you score the goal and you beat your mate, whatever. But I'm in a pub with like 15 other lads that are playing online and are shit hot at this thing. And I'm kind of a passive gamer. Now, we started drinking at 10:45 in the morning. This tournament went on until 9-ish at night. So you can imagine the last couple of games, it was like a Royal Rumble. But yeah, I mean, FIFA 15 certainly on the PlayStation 4 is the purest sports game I've ever played in my life. But I will say this, something with the AI on FIFA 15 on the PlayStation 4, maybe the Xbox One, the next generation version of it, I've heard, whether this is true or not, that the goalkeepers and sometimes outfield AI players can make rash decisions, as footballers sometimes do. They'll elbow someone, trip someone, headbutt someone. So as I'm playing the game, my goalkeeper decides to run out, unaided by my triangle button, may I add, and punch somebody in the face and get sent off. And then I talk to another lad who's got the game, and I say, should that happen? Is there a problem with the game? They say, no, apparently so. The AI now is that good that goalkeepers, because they're normally like 6'5" and Dutch, think they can come out and punch people. And this is one of the tricks of the game, how sports games have evolved, where you used to rip your gloves off on EA Hockey and take pleasure in beating people up, and that's the only reason why you buy a hockey game, was to have a fight with someone. It's come into FIFA now, so I mean, this is what I've been doing at the moment. I've been playing FIFA 15 and like waiting for my players to fucking lose their minds and just start kicking the shit out of each other, and it did happen today. One player just literally decided to go through the back of another player and nearly like break his legs and get sent off. And this is the beginning of Skynet, if you ask me. We're all done for now. If FIFA starts turning on you, we're done for.
You've got to say, though, having said that you're in the tournament, people are going to be asking, well, how far did you get in this tournament?
Well, let's be honest, right? When you blindly given a team and I pulled Bayern Munich out of the, that's like picking Tom Cruise out of Action Heroes, do you know what I'm saying? You think, yes, I've got Tom Cruise, I've got Bayern Munich, but I'm playing lads that are online constantly. Even when they're intoxicated, they were fucking awesome on FIFA. Unfortunately, I didn't make it out of the group stage. But I had a good day, you know. It was a great experience, but FIFA's the only game through all the years that makes me feel like that. I love something like Grand Theft Auto. I love stabbing a prostitute. There's nothing like it. There's no FIFA. Is there? Like picking up some random girl, having oral sex with her, shooting her in the back of the head and getting your money back and then driving off.
Just wiping yourself off as you drive away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the first-person perspective on it now gives you a whole different experience in GTA. But there's, you know, that's a different thing to FIFA. But I suppose scoring a goal in FIFA is like, it's quite orgasmic, especially when there's 16 other lads baying at you at the same time. It's as primal as it got that day. It was as primal as it got in terms of video game playing.
Yeah, beer and FIFA, it just sounds like, I don't know if it's a perfect combination or a recipe for disaster. But, you know.
There were friendships tested that day. I'll say that. They were tested. And by the end of the day, there were things thrown at a wall. One lad lost and got up and literally turned the console and stood by it so nobody could turn it back on. What other game could you do that with? I mean, your card game doesn't create that sort of thrill there, does it?
It doesn't. I'll give you that, mate. No, I've never sort of leapt off the couch having played a winning card. No.
Yeah. Oh, damn, your troll beat my orc.
Yes. Plus one damn sword. You. Damn it.
I've got a good packet of top trumps at home, Dave. That bring out.
Oh, yeah.
I'll top see trumps. You fucking the real side of you come out then.
That'll be it. Then there'll be fighting. There'll be blood spilled. There will be blood.
Blood, mate. That's what we want. No, my, I mean, like with video games, I said today I went into my local CEX and had a little peruse around, and I just couldn't get FIFA out of my head. I wanted to buy Dark Souls 2 or something. I thought, I'm going to give this my time, but no, I just want to fucking sign a player that I can't afford. It's pathetic, isn't it?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, people sort of like say, oh, you know, if you only buy COD and FIFA, you know, there must be something wrong with you because you're missing a whole world of other games. But there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, I just think it's a bit of snobbery. And I think that you get that with anything and everything, movies, books, any kind of media. You get that kind of snobbery. But fuck it, if that's what people enjoy. I'll tell you what, I mean, I finished COD. I know you talked about it last time, but I finished the story. Fuck, that is. What a ride that game is. It's just
great bit of writing, isn't it?
Oh, wicked. You know, it's so fun, you know, just to play. And there's, it mixes it up. You get all your action set pieces, but then there's stealth bits in it. There's, you know, the story. Kevin Spacey is fantastic. You know, he chews the scenery a little bit, but, you know, he's great. He's like, he's good fun. He's good value for what he does and everything. And the graphics are spot on. You know, really are. A lot of the cutscenes and everything else just look superb. And the game itself, I mean, I played it on PS4. It looks really. I mean, I played Ghosts and I enjoy Ghosts, but this just like, it takes it up to another level entirely in terms of graphics. But yeah, it's fantastic. Really enjoyed that.
The graphics are ace, isn't it? I think it's that level where you escape the prison and you get in that big exo suit, and you're so thrilled to just be demolishing everything,
just punching walls in.
Brilliant bit of gaming that, because you build up to it, because you see them so many times as exo suits, you think, oh fuck, I'm gonna have a go in one of them. I'm gonna get one of them, and you get it for that. It's so cinematic. Yeah, you know, and they are though, aren't they? But this, talk about an interactive movie. It's literally perfect coming together of like game design and like movie making, really, because it's a great story.
It's wonderful. I mean, like the bit for me, I think that did it was the bit where you're on the highway and you're chasing after that van and you're jumping from bus to bus, or you know, and you're not doing anything, you know, technically in terms of like, you know, button. It's kind of a quick time event in some ways. You're just pressing to like at the right time to catch the car, and you know, your jumps don't have to be very precise. But I didn't give a shit. It was so thrilling. Like when that level ended, I was on Twitter. I was like, wow, that was incredible. You know, it's just, I had to tell somebody about it, and not that anybody fucking listens to you on Twitter, but you know what I mean. I was just like, oh man, and it does that, and it paces it out nicely. You know, there are sort of like nice bits where, I mean, the story kind of like at certain times of it, you think, what am I doing here, or you know, why am I doing this? But it doesn't matter. You know, it's great fun. It really is. I mean, just to talk a bit more about football games a little bit. I bought the latest Pro Evo, which I think Pro Evo and FIFA have had an interesting relationship in as much as like they've kind of like outdo each other at times. Like say one, you know, for a period of time, Pro Evo would have been the king, and then FIFA's been the king for the last few years. But this Pro Evo, honestly, it's, I mean, I haven't got the latest FIFA, but I got the FIFA 14 last year's, and this Pro Evo just feels like it is kind of, it's right on FIFA's heels right now. It's a really organic football game. It's a football game at the end of the day, but it feels like it's kind of you can do a tutorial, as daft as it sounds. And I know with FIFA, there's so much more that you can do than just sort of like lob and pass and shoot. There's so much more you can do if you can invest the time into it. But with this, you can do a tutorial, but it's so cleverly done because like it'll teach you the basics, that you know, the fundamentals kind of thing. But then it will layer it, but it doesn't feel like it's doing it at such a, you know, too far a pace that you're sort of like, how do I do that? You know, what am I doing here? Or how do I do this? It's so well done. And then the games themselves, I mean, like you said, you were in the pub for hours. I mean, my mate came round, and I've known him for 30-odd years. You know, we used to play Kickoff 2 on the Amiga when we were kids. And we stayed up from, say, we were playing from 8 in the evening till 3:30 in the morning, just Pro Evo. And it was phenomenal. Yeah, and we were just drinking beers, and it was fucking ace, you know. And it's really well done, and I would recommend that people try Pro Evo, because I don't think people overlook it for FIFA, because FIFA's never, you know, I think it's kind of reached a point now where it is the best selling football game, and whatever Pro Evo does, I don't think it's ever going to change. But I really do think that people give Pro Evo a chance this time, because it's a cracker. Really, is good.
Yeah. my best mate, funnily enough, just say, when he came up to join in the tournament, he said, "I don't play FIFA, I've got the new Pro Evo." And he says, "It's the best football game I've ever played in my life." Mm. And nobody says it. You're the only two people I've ever heard say it.
That's it, though. I think EA are sort of in danger of dropping the ball soon, though, because they're sitting on the laurels now. Mm. It's purely because, it's with FIFA and with me as well, with the Madden franchise. Because they've got all the licensing rights to all all of the teams with FIFA, more than Pro Evo's got. From what I've read, Pro Evo's slowly getting more and more of their licenses for team names and player names and kits and grounds and all of this. But it's the same with Madden, because they've bought the right. They're the only ones that can make NFL games with the proper players and all of this. Because they've got that right, we're the only ones that can put all this real shit in. They're sort of really are sitting on the laurels, and it can really seem dropping the ball, because they're just getting a bit lazy with it. It was the best American football games was 2K games, NFL 2K5, I think it was. It's still the best American football game, and it was the worst thing that could ever happen when EA bought the NFL license, and there's no competition. There's nobody to like push each other, and it's a really shit situation to be in. And there should be some sort of law against it, really, that you shouldn't be able to do that. That those with the most money can go, well, we've got the rights to it. Nobody else can make all the proper licensed games. It's really does destroy what could be, you know, a good franchise by somebody else, I think.
Yeah. And then, excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. I really should stop giving French people blowjobs. Pro Evo does that. You know, it's got the Champions League. It's like kind of that's all official. And it does have some of the sort of, you know, European proper clubs and everything. The likenesses and some of the Premier League, you know, like Man United and whatever, but then they are called, say, different names, like, you know, so I can't think of any off the top of my head.
I think
but
one used to be London North, didn't it, for Arsenal?
That's it, essentially. But they've got the proper names of the players, you know, whereas, like, years gone by, they even had to make that up. But it's that, if that really matters to you, I think one of the jewels in FIFA's crown, if you like, is that they've got the Ultimate Team stuff. Now, that I've never tried it, but that apparently makes them a shit ton of money. You know, buying these packs of, I don't even know how it works, because I'm probably the wrong demographic that it's aimed at, if I'm honest, but that's where they make a gazillion amount of money on it. It's just insane, apparently, what the level of money they make and all that sort of stuff. So, but whereas Pro Evo, it feels like a pure football game. You know, there's sort of none of that, you know, other stuff on it, I guess, but there's, you know, again, it's one of those that I thought, well, I'll give Pro Evo a try. I've bought FIFA for most of the years gone by, and I've kind of ignored FIFA since when it was out, Pro Evo, when it was back out on the PS2, and that was when I think it was at its height. But since the new, that if you like the 360 and everything, that's when FIFA's really took off, because that's when we've obviously embraced online gaming, apart from when our souls fucking DDoS it, and you know, so you can't use it, but you know,
it was the Koreans.
Yeah. Right, well, listen, we are, as always, as we do in these shows, we're sort of bending the rules of the space-time continuum as far as 60 minutes with Go. But what I don't want to happen is, I'm going to hand it over to you two guys. I don't want either of us coming to the table with notes that we've made or things we want to talk about. So, Ramrod, Chris, is there anything, if you want to carry on with video games, anything else entertainment-wise related that you wanted to talk about tonight? I'm going to hand it over to you two.
Oh, this is the worst part. Go, Chris, it's you, pressure.
Okay, well, okay, so
you don't have to rush. It's just, you know, if there's something you wanted to talk about, let's talk about it now. That's the thing.
Well, there is, but it's one of those where okay, let's just get on with it. It's True Detective, right? Have either of you seen True Detective?
I know Dave hasn't because he doesn't watch TV shows.
Dave, you asshole. You
but
have
I
to
have
watch this.
I don't have
okay,
time for
right.
films anymore.
Watched it
TV
all.
Series and definitely no.
Right. Okay. So, right, where do I start with this? So let's say, for instance, I mean, this is a, if you like, police procedural TV series, 8 episodes long. It stars Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson, Michelle Monaghan. They're probably the main stars, if you like. The first two, obviously. I mean, and I have to say that I know that, Dave, you don't watch a lot of TV. And I totally appreciate and understand why, because watching a TV show or TV series is kind of like a marriage in some ways. You go into it with the best of intentions, hoping it's going to be brilliant and amazing, but you're never sure what you're going to get. Because, you know, it's kind of like... I've watched The Wire, you know, and the thing that kind of put me off from watching that, even though so many people have told me it was amazing, and it is, you know, I love it, is that it's a 60-hour commitment, you know, and I totally understand why people wouldn't want to do that. Last year, I watched Breaking Bad for the first time. Phenomenal. Amazing. But I could totally understand why people perhaps wouldn't want to do it. And I understand why you'd want to watch a movie, because a movie, it's a 2, maybe 3 hour commitment at most, and you kind of, yeah, you know, that you can make a decision about whether you like it or not, and I totally agree. But this, for me, blurs the lines between movies and TV. And I think over the past few years, like, TV has become more than just TV. It's had more money spent on, you look at Game of Thrones and stuff like that. But for me, this is just, I've kind of done a slip of the tongue before when I've been talking to so many people about it. I've got to talk about it, otherwise I'm going to burst, you know. When I knew that we were going to be recording this, I thought, it's this perfect opportunity. I've got to talk about True Detective, because it's so well done. It honestly, everything about it, it's, if you want to call it movie standard, if that's the standard that, you know, is, you know, kind of suggests that it's, had a shitload of money spent on it or whatever, but this is phenomenal. And the acting, the writing, the cinematography, everything about this blurs the lines for me between a movie. It's like 55 minutes an episode, so it's not for a major commitment for your time. But I know that people that have blasted through this. I mean, I watched it in a week or so. I watched it with my wife again, and she enjoyed it to a certain degree, but not as much as me. This got really under my skin. Rightly so, McConaughey gets all the plaudits because his character is so kind of like out there, but charismatic, and you can't help but being taken in by him and everything he does. And it's kind of told in flashbacks, like the story. These are two cops, and they're investigating a murder, and that's all I'm going to say about the story. I'm not going to go into any more detail about anything, because I think I would love people to sort of like watch it and make their own minds up about it. And it does take an episode to get your head around the conversation, because it's kind of like I don't know if it's set in Louisiana. It's kind of like that, you know, he's Texan anyway, McConaughey, and you know, sometimes I find it hard to understand what Harrelson's saying. It sounds like he's got cotton wool in his cheeks, because he's kind of like, you know, but it's, you know, it takes you maybe an episode to kind of see, you know, because he goes off on tangents. He's talking about philosophy. He's talking about his, you know, kind of ideas and thoughts, what the meaning of life is. And it's just, but they're explaining about, they're being kind of questioned, talked to about this case that they dealt with 17 years ago. So it's kind of told in flashbacks. And honestly, there are things that there are certain episodes I felt like I was holding my breath watching it, because it just felt so tense, and such an undertone of just this kind of threat. There's something there, you know. And for me, it sort of reminded me of Seven. You know, it reminded me of like if you like, an 8-hour version of Seven, if anybody could put themselves through that, you know, or Manhunter, those kind of police procedural. Manhunter gets so under my skin whenever I watch it that I can't get the soundtrack out of my head. So, and I get so freaked out at the beginning of that movie when the guy is walking around the house and it's first person perspective, and he's looking around the rooms of the kids and the family, and the wife wakes up. That movie gets under my skin. This gets under my skin. True Detective does. It kind of reminds me a little bit as well of Homicide: Life on the Street. I don't know if you ever watched that, a TV show, sort of like in the early 90s. And that was, again, very police procedural. And it kind of went up against NYPD Blue. And I think NYPD Blue it got more of the sort of like commercial plaudits, you know, because it was a bit more soap opera. And I really loved NYPD Blue. I used to watch it with my mum. But Homicide: Life on the Street was more police procedural. It was more about the sort of like what these cops go through, the sort of like how driven they are, you know, and how cases affect them, you know, how and how they go through their lives, and it can really change them as people. And Homicide: Life on the Street was by kind of inspired by like David Simon stuff, who did a lot, you know, the Wire, you know, was involved with that as well. So, but even now, like, and I'm jumping all over the place, but that kind of is a bit like True Detective. But there was a case like the, you know, the first episode, there was a cop called Tim Bayliss, and it was his first day on the job, and he'd been like the mayor's security or whatever, and he wanted to get into homicide. But his first day on the job was rape murder of a young black girl. And Adina Watson, and even now, like, I can, this is a fictional character, but based on a true story. And I think that's where True Detective comes from. That's why it's such an engaging story, is because it's based on a lot of true stuff. And it was about, even throughout the whole series, and he was in this for years, you know, and he was like kind of plagued by this case, you know, this murder, and he never solved it in the end. And it was just watching his character go through this whole series and how he became so obsessed by it all. And that kind of reminds me a lot of True Detective. You know, it's this obsession. It's about this, you know, and the sort of like the people. And it's scary. I mean, it did. I was so on edge in places. And it's just, I was in tears at the end of it, because it was just, I didn't want to leave these characters behind. You know, I knew it was only 8 episodes long, but I got so drawn into them as people. Like, they felt so believable. And, you know, I just loved it. I thought, I just didn't want it to end. And I wasn't in tears because it ended, you know, not that much of a pussy. but it was mainly because I'm not going to say it, because it was just, I just loved it, the characters. I loved the two leads. They're as good as each other in different ways. You know, I said McConaughey gets all the plaudits for his performance, and again, rightly so. But Harrelson matches him on a slightly different level, you know, with his character. He's more of a family man, but he has his own issues and everything else. Whereas, like, McConaughey's like this loner and just kind of like a bit fucked up because of his job and everything. There are things that are in it that it's about what you're. Your imagination runs wild because of what they're talking about, and it shows you a glimpse of things, but then it won't show you everything. And it's stunning. It really is. And I think, Dave, honestly, I know you're not into TV as much, but honestly, I think if you watch this, you would be blown away by it. You know, and it's not, like I say, not a huge commitment. You know, it's 8 hours at most, which I know is still a lot, but you know, you could watch it in a week or so.
I mean, this is the thing that I like with this, is that it's a one thing and it's done. I mean, one of my main concerns about TV series is, and I've got hucked into some in the past before, it's like, oh, they're really good and season 2's good, then season 3 goes shit and season 4's bad, or it gets cut after 2 or 3 seasons and you've invested so many hours into it and it either gets cut or it goes shit and you go, oh, for fuck's sake, that's nothing. So I do like the thought that it's these 8 episodes, that's the story, and you know you're done. Although, what are your thoughts? There's season 2, there's 2 different leads. What do you think of this?
It's apparently, from what I understand, it's going to be different stories.
Yeah.
It's going to be Colin Farrell's in it, and Rachel McAdams, and who's the guy who was in Swingers, and I've just totally brain fart. Vince Vaughn, that's it. So it's kind of going to be different. It's going to be, you know, separate, but it's going to have the True Detective name above it. And from my point of view, unless it's anything other than stunning or amazing, it's always going to fall short. You know, because this has set the bar so high. It really has, and I'm desperate to know what you think, Ramrod, because I could be, you might be thinking, you're talking out your ass, because I've heard people say, oh, it's a bit boring, it's a bit slow, and I'm honestly, I'm thinking to myself, it's a bit talky. Somebody said to me at work, it's a bit talky. It's a fucking movie, it's a fucking TV show, what do you want, you know what I mean? Sorry, go on, tell me what you think.
No, I mean, it's right, though, because I think when I started watching it, I think the first two episodes, because it's told in such a disjointed way, you do really have to concentrate. I mean, like, it's like when Pulp Fiction came out, people either got it, cinephiles got it, and then the general public went, I'm going to go and see this great film. What the fuck is it? It's jumping around with time. And Joe Average doesn't understand that concept. And with the first two episodes, you do have to kind of go, all right, we're getting into this here. It's giving you, establishing characters, establishing time and plot. By episode three, you go, holy fuck, I'm watching something here. And by the time the episode comes around where McConaughey has to go back into his undercover cop world bikers. I mean,
one of the episodes I was talking about is just...
Amazing. It's the best. I think it's the best one. And like Breaking Bad, yeah, it's epic. But this episode in True Detective, I've talked about it so much, selling it to people, with that one tracking shot where they're running through those houses in the black suburbs they go to, is, I mean, Michael Mann hasn't done that in a film before. And the direction on it is fucking incredible, the cinematography, and it's quite a melancholy show. It doesn't hit you hard with action. It slowly builds around these things, and then it'll start with something that it ends with and throw you around. And if you've got any intelligence, which luckily you have, and most people probably listening to this would have seen it, and if not, it is the best TV show. Condensed into 8 episodes, it's ridiculous what they've got into it, and it's got a real satisfying ending. And it's good that you likened it to Manhunter, because I think it had that feel of real, because I love police procedural stuff like David Ayer's My Hero and Michael Mann, any of those movies. Even Miami Vice is one of my favourite ever movies, and people fucking hate it. But there's something about True Detective that won't be repeated again, even in the next series. They'll do something different, but that as like a little standalone thing is one of the best bits of television, I think, in contemporary television, though, because you can get away with a lot more these days, and they're a lot more ambitious. And in terms of getting McConaughey, I literally his peak, and Woody Harrelson, his evolution of his character, because he's a fucking great actor. He was in Cheers, for Christ's sake. He was brilliant in Cheers, and he was brilliant in Zombieland, and he's brilliant in Rampart and Natural Born Killers. You know, he plays a character where McConaughey has to call back onto his past, but he's still that same stoic sort of person who's driven by his need to solve a crime, whereas Woody Harrelson is trying to solve his own shit, and he's just taken along on the ride. But his story was brilliant in it, because you could really relate to him, as he's like sort of a dickhead everyman, sort of, I make mistakes even though I'm a cop, or I'm shit at life, when Matthew McConaughey's like, I don't care about life. He's so nihilistic all the way through it that he hates people. And then you kind of find yourself at the end seeing him having an influence on Woody Harrelson, and their dynamic is all-time brilliant buddy cop thing. It's epic. It's brilliant. I loved it. I'd watch it again and again and again. Good luck to him on the next series, because they've got a fucking lot to live up to.
Yeah. And they felt like, you know, kind of at times in the series hate each other or don't like, well, not necessarily McConaughey, he's got indifference to him, you know, but you know,
he fucks his wife.
Spoiler. Harrelson's sort of like, you know, he gets frustrated with McConaughey, you know, but they have this unspoken kind of bond at the end that, you know, and I think that's kind of what. And again, I so want to talk to you about why it affected me so much at the end, but I can't, because it would spoil it for people. But honestly, just watch it, please. It's currently, if you have Sky Go or Sky, you can download it as part of the you know, the TV packages, things that they've got. And that's what I did, you know. But I'm looking at buying it for £20 because I just think on Blu-ray, it's you know, it's worth it, and I'll watch it and re-watch it again.
It's a great, like you say, though, it's a movie. It is a film, but it's just an 8-hour film. Yeah. You know, and that's a hard sell to most people, but fucking hell, there'll never be another one of these series like True, that series. It's a total one-off.
Yeah. All right, I shall put it on my to-watch list. My ever-increasing
He still won't watch
list.
It, Chris.
I was
going to
say,
you're
fucking lying to us.
I know.
20 years he'll watch it.
Yeah, it'll come out on some sort of, like, I don't know, 4D holographic thing of the future, whatever... You know, Trump's Blu-ray. It'll be that 20 years from now. I'll eventually get around to watching it while I'm slowly rocking in my rocking chair and can barely see it. But yeah, I'll get there eventually.
You'll be in Necromantic 3 by then, Dave, and I'll be sucking your eye in Germany. And that's what's going to happen to you. I'm not letting you get buried. I've got a use for you, mate.
As long as you film it, I don't mind.
I'll give you 60 minutes, mate.
That's it. Yeah, give somebody some enjoyment from it, at least. Come on, then. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
No, that's it. I'm all done.
You're all done. You're spent. What about you, Ramrod?
He's spent. Well, I mean, I wanted to mention a musical act briefly and just the movie they're going to be in. And Neil Blomkamp's bringing out a film called Chappie.
Yes.
Oh, so trailers. That looks...
Trailers look insane. It stars obviously Hugh Jackman and Chantal Copley in mocap doing Chappie's robot, but there's a music act in it called D. Antwoord. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of them.
Nope.
Now, D. Antwoord are like a hip hop / rave act from South Africa, and I'm a fucking huge fan of them. They're totally bonkers. It's Ninja and Yolandi Visa, and they are white South Africans, and they do Eminem style hip hop, but with like trance rave music over the top of it. It's an acquired taste. If you like your really weird dancey techno stuff with hip hop over it, which I really fucking, I'll listen to anything. They do great music, and they've been cast as two street criminals that kind of take Chappie under their wing and like bring out his human side in it. I mean, obviously Blomkamp is like from there, and his whole thing is South Africa. He's obsessed with, you know, that land. And D. Antwoord, if anybody likes sort of obscure hip hop with a bit of, you know, sort of heavy house stuff in the background, their latest album is just fucking insanely good. And it's really good that they're going to be in a movie as well, because I think they've been quite maligned because they're from South Africa and they're white, and it's really hard to get their style of music out there because of, like, you know, obviously black music dominates hip-hop. But they're going to be in this movie, Chappie, and I think it's really brilliant that if nobody's ever heard... You know, like I say, the music's an acquired taste. It ain't the Rolling Stones, and it ain't NWA, you know it, but fucking hell, I'm so glad that they're getting thrust into the limelight, because this film's going to be quite successful, I should think, especially with Jackman on board. Yeah. And Blomkamp is, he can do no wrong. Even Elysium, people think was a misstep. It's fucking brilliant. It's a masterpiece.
God, yeah.
Sci-fi, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we saw his alien designs that came online the other week, and I shed a tear to think that his alien sequel would have been probably the best fucking one since Cameron's movie. But I just want to say, D. Antwoord, anybody out there that's got like an open mind to sort of hardcore rave hip hop music, but the album's exceptionally good. They sample Sigur Rós and Aphex Twin, and their latest album is called Donker Mag. I don't know what the fuck that means, but D. Antwoord is Afrikaans for the answer. Look them up online. They got a good history. They're quite controversial, but they do a lot of collaborations with like surrealist artists, so their videos look more like Nine Inch Nails than anything. So they're quite dark. They're not a happy hip-hop act. They're quite fucked up. So if you like sort of like a goth take on hip-hop rave, fucking I've created a new genre tonight. Get a bit of D. Antwoord, and obviously look forward to Chappie as well, because I honestly think it's going to be Sci-Fi Movie of the Year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You can't go wrong with his movies, though, can you?
No, District 9 was incredible. Yeah. I love that. I really did. And I've got the Elysium to watch, but I haven't watched it yet. But again, I hear mixed things, but again, it's...
No. Honest to God, Chantal Copley's bad guy in that is one of the fucking best things. And the way he uses CGI.
Oh, yeah.
There's nobody else does it like
him. He doesn't hide it, though, because he puts everything in stark daylight.
and bright daylight.
It still looks so real. It's
imagine
amazing.
It's Alien Movie Dave with aliens running around South African slums.
Yeah.
It fucking yeah. It'd be good. Bloom Camp, whoosh, go on, Deanne Toward, buy that album.
Then there you go. God, how many recommendations have the listeners had this episode?
It's crazy.
Come on. Spoilt, I say, you know. Come on. Right, come on, let's wrap it up. To follow online, Twitter is normally the way. And I know, Chris, you're on there. People can follow you on Twitter at
DastardlyJabby.
And Ramrod is still struggling to get into the 21st century.
I can
in
cut
Twitter.
In just there. As of this weekend, I'll be on Twitter.
Okay.
And you'll be looking for Ramrod's ghost.
As you are on Instagram.
Indeed.
They can follow you and your fine beard.
Oh, it's a fine beard now.
Is it? Now, will it be Ramrod's ghost or Ramrod's _ ghost?
Well, I'll get back to you on that. There'll be a topless shot of me with a beard. So, you know, there's not many that look like me online, let's be honest.
Well, that's true. Well, I'll tell you what then. When listeners get to the outro, when I come to edit this, you let me know. I'll bung it in the outro and they'll
done,
know,
mate.
They'll know your Twitter handle too.
I will be there.
Good. And of course, you can follow this show and me on at 60 Minutes With. So let's call this a night. We will be back. We are actually, I think this is a good time as any while we're tying this up. We're are we going to go bye for each other? Are we going to go bye or are or are we staying monthly? There was talk maybe of going bi-weekly.
I'm quite happy to do whatever you want me to do, Dave. Okay. Right. As usual.
Well, let's say keep an eye on this feed for when we appear. We may be here a little bit more often than we have been. Shall we put it that way? Let's tease them. Yeah. Okay. Let's tweak
I'm
them.
In. I'm in.
You're always in. You're always like...
I am in.
All the way in.
I've got far too much to say.
Right.
I'm happy to experiment.
Yeah, okay then. Yeah, go on. We'll try for a bit of bye then.
As long as you're gentle.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm gentle. Don't. He's not. He never is.
Ramrod, I'm saying no more.
Yeah, that's it. It's, yeah.
You'll discover why.
Right, it's been good as always, guys, and yeah, we'll be back very soon. So yeah, let's all say bye-bye to the listeners.
Bye.
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 There we go, the end of another show, and I can confirm that Ramrod is on Twitter. So pens and pencils at the ready. God, that was a bit old school, wasn't it? Okay, smartphones at the ready. Ramrod's Twitter handle, name, whatever you want to call it, is Ramrod's _ghost. So there you go. Add him on Twitter. As Chris said, you can add him on Twitter. He's at DastardlyJabby. You can add me and the show at 60 Minutes With. You can also like the Facebook page. That would be very nice. Facebook.com/60MinutesWith. The long-awaited webpage is coming. Don't worry, it is coming. Webpage, email address, all that stuff is coming. It will be here in Q1 of this year, hopefully. iTunes reviews are also most welcome, and thank you to let's have a look. There's 3 reviews, all 5 stars. So massive thanks to Lacey666, to Pud31, and to Jabby1976. So thank you very much for them. I will be back very soon. In fact, as of time of recording this and doing the edit just tonight, I'm going to be spending 60 minutes with J.R. Smalling, who was on the road with Kiss in the early years. He also worked with Aerosmith. Lots of great stories from the 70s and onwards on the road with bands, so I'm really looking forward to that. That will be online just days after this one, so we're starting 2015, hitting you with a few episodes back to back. So once again, thank you for listening. We'll be back very soon. Thank you.